And to see them be able to make the journey from Afghan to refugee to U.S. paratrooper, and then to be there in that critical moment and able to bring their family out.
Welcome to Teach Me to Fish. This episode is a continuation of our conversation with Command Sergeant Major David Pitt. In the last episode, he talked about three things. People will always remember how you made them feel, building relationships and comfort over crisis, and how compliance leads to commitment. In this episode, Dave talks about his experience as one of the last soldiers to leave Afghanistan and his proudest moments as an American. If you love hearing from inspirational leaders like Dave, be sure to follow Teach Me to Fish podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any platform that you get your podcasts. What I want to know is, you had already been in the Army before 9/11, and so you lived your entire military career through 9/11, through Afghanistan, through Iraq, and then you got to be there on the final days. You can start anywhere, but what did it feel like? What did you see on the ground when you first showed up there for the evacuation? What did you feel like? And then what did you feel like with somebody with so much invested when it was all over?
That was actually my first time in Afghanistan, because I showed up right when you guys got back from Afghanistan and I had just came off the trail. And so I got the Khalsu mission and then every other Iraq mission after that. But when I showed up on the ground to HKIA to close it, from a paratrooper that had seen the war all the way through, I would tell you that I didn't really have a lot of personal feelings. You know, I know some people might think, well, it was wasted time. And here's why I didn't feel like it was wasted time. Because I saw the look on the faces of the people that we were leaving. Not leaving, but like the Afghanis that didn't want us to leave. I saw the look on their faces. And it was like, if you ever questioned the good that the U.S. military does, like, you couldn't question in that moment, because the agony of us leaving was so, it just was written all over their face. So I didn't feel like it would be, you know, all these people, Pat, you know, losses of soldiers. And again, I cannot speak for any, Gold Star family or anything like that, because everybody has their own feeling towards it. But to actually see the faces of the Afghans that were like, you know, you just tell they didn't want us to leave. Like, it, that in itself should let you know, like, the power and the effect we had on that country for those years. There was a lot of different entities there. So a lot of international, it was a lot of entities there. So to work with all of them, to get through it, make sure you got everybody out, it was a tough mission, but and then, you know, didn't sleep. We just out the patrol. And, you know, I was just driving around the perimeter, like, you know, 23 out of the, probably 19 out of the 24 hours, I was just on this rotation. You know, I came back in for the cousin, but other than that, I was just, you know, rotating there, just checking on 1st Brigade and checking on our counterparts and making sure they were good. I can't believe I'm finding it hard to describe, because it was just an eerie feeling, like, to see everything just coming in and, you know, trying to get all the U.S. citizens and trying to get everybody that helped us, and then having babies, you know, put over the fence, and you try to give the baby back, and they're trying to give it back to you, and they're like, take our child, and you're like, and you go to the orphanage, and you have all these brand new babies and little kids that had just been like, people drop them off at the gate, like, please leave with my child. Here's one thing I'll tell you. We had two Afghani paratroopers that, when the war started, they were in Afghanistan. Then they got out of Afghanistan, came, joined the Army, and they were in ASA. One was a lieutenant, one was a sergeant. I think one of the proudest moments as an American was to them come and say, our family's at the gate. Can you please get them? Absolutely, we can. We're going right down to this gate and we're picking them up. And to see them be able to make the journey from Afghan to refugee to U.S. paratrooper, and then to be there in that critical moment and able to bring their family out. That has to be one of the most proudest moments as a as an American, and to me. I can't speak for anybody else, but to see that, and maybe it's because, you know, I'm an immigrant, and so I understand the journey, but to see them be able to, they didn't join the army thinking that would be the moment that it all paid off. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. They were grateful to America, and they became a paratrooper because they were grateful to America and they wanted to serve their country. But then to be in that moment and to actually be able to do that, it was like the proudest moment. One of the proudest moments I ever had as an American, to watch somebody leave, join the army, become a paratrooper, and then be there at the end, and then be able to go to your leadership, because we talk about leadership matters. To be able to go to your leadership and go, my family's at the gate. Can we please go get them? And it wasn't even a question of like, are you sure they're your family? We don't know. It wasn't.
No question asked. Let's go.
It was like, for you, I'd go out the gate and get, you know what I'm saying? Like, that person, that's how you felt about it, because you're like, because you understand the sacrifice, the journey, to come full circle, to be back in that moment, not knowing that these decisions that you made once you left as a little kid, Afghanistan, all came down to be able to rescue your family. That was unbelievable to me. That I think about that a lot, just in myself alone, because that had to be one of my proudest days as an American. I'm just telling you, that had to be one of the proudest days as an American to me, to be able to watch somebody, an immigrant, do all that only to end up right there in that moment and save his family. And none of it could have been predicted that was the path that was all the decisions those two made, from being a lieutenant, one being a lieutenant, one being a sergeant, to being in that position at that moment and rescue your family. Nobody would have, how are you going to script that? You can't script that. And I think, so, you know, that was a really big, I mean, I kind of one of the most proudest things I've ever seen as an American. Me personally,
and you've seen a lot, and you've seen a lot of stuff, right, over the years, living through that, you know. So to hear you say that, that's one of the proudest moments that you've ever seen. That's saying something, brother. That's saying something.
Yeah, because you don't. I mean, again, none of them did that to be there. They did it because they felt they owed America for rescuing them, and then just happened by chance to be in that moment. To be able to, you know, both of them, I don't think that either one of them had been back to Afghanistan since then.
Wow.
Hadn't seen their mom since then. And to be at the gate and watch their mom in tears or their sister in tears after an absence of 15 years, 10, 11 years or whatever. And you're back in a U.S. uniform rescuing them.
That's amazing.
You can't. That's just unbelievable. And so that was just, you know, that, you know, to, you know, to see what our chaplain did with the orphanage, you know, to taking care of the little kids that were getting handed over the fence, you know, to making sure they were got out on the planes. I remember it was like 5 days straight, every hour on the hour, a C-17 landed or took off. It's like for 5 straight days. Like, I can't make that up. Like, every hour on the hour, a plane landed and it took off for 5 straight days.
It landed empty and took off full.
Yes, for 5 straight days. So just landing, hour, and one would take off on that hour, and then one would land, I mean, just back to back for 5 straight days. It was maybe longer, but I know it's at least for 5 straight days.
You just made that sound,
I mean,
like,
that's how we got everybody out.
You just made that sound like that's something normal that or like somebody can do. There's only a couple organizations in the world that could synchronize something like that without being given months to prepare for something like D-Day, where you've been given months, years to prepare. I think you guys were given a couple weeks, and it was like get on the plane, go. Right. And you got there with a lot of help from the international partners and other organizations. Right. But you had to put that thing together. You made that seem like that was something that's pretty standard, but only coming out of the 82nd and some of the other organizations that helped, could you synchronize something like that every hour on the hour for 5 days?
The war has just made us all in an act. Like, you remember before 9/11 and how everything was really separated. You see all money training. And then after 9/11, after the war, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan kicked off, you know, you had a lot of joint. But I'll tell you, I was so proud of the Air Force. I was like, man, nobody better ever tell me that they don't show up, because, you know, every pilot from everywhere just flying mission after mission, like landing. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And, you know, just taking everything out of the C-17s and people just sitting on the ground, like just people just sitting on the ground, just holding on to anything, and just cargoes of people just leaving. It was just to be out there on the wire and, you know, having, you know, paratroopers look at the Taliban and the Taliban's looking at the paratroopers and, I wasn't even worried at that point. I was like, you know, don't do anything that's going to get you guys hurt, because we were just so intense.
It was so
the
mutual. Like, the feeling, like, only if you'd stared them down in the eye, can you get the feeling was mutual. They didn't want to die for their cause at that moment.
The intent of the paratroopers there were like, This ain't the day. Like, this ain't the time for you to do anything. Like, this ain't your moment right now, because it's not gonna go well for you. Like, that's how intent they were. And then I tell you what, too, you know, you talk about soldiers seeing stuff, and, you know, we had a lot of paratroopers affected by seeing what was going on the other side of the wire that they weren't able to control. So a lot of them came back and, you know, went through, you know, counseling and stuff like that, because they were on this side of the wire. They couldn't necessarily go on the other side of the wire to stop the Taliban, you know, like beating somebody down and right in front of you, you know, like, and you're just on this side of the wire, a lot of anger. Cause, you know, American paratroopers, they don't stand for that. They ain't gonna stand by and watch that happen. And to have to stay focused and not intervene, it took a discipline from the paratroopers.
Yeah, amen.
And the leaders.
Amen. That's the stuff that they built in comfort. They built that in comfort, so that in crisis, that discipline was there.
The pure weight of it was just that whole, having the whole world watch it, and everything you do was going to be up for scrutiny. And just to execute it so well as a 82nd, as a army, as a Marine, everybody executed it so well. Everybody was on it, man.
What did it feel like when the ramp went up that last time?
It was overwhelming, honestly. It was like, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like, you know, the scene out of Commando or something like, but it really felt like that. Like, it really felt like you're sitting there and you're like, we did it, you know, we did it, mission accomplished. And it just felt really good. And you know, to look at, you know, I'm looking at the paratroopers and satisfaction on their part from a job well done. And I don't think they realized, because, you know, they didn't have their phones and they didn't have anything, so they didn't have the outside world. They didn't understand how big that it was to everybody watching it every day. Like, you know, I had some knowledge because I'm in the talk, you know, I'm in briefing. But to them on the lines, they didn't have their phones. So they didn't have the outside. They didn't know how focused the world was on that.
Yeah.
And, you know, when they finally got out of it and understood how focused, how big it was, they were like, wow, you know, something for all of them to be proud of.
Yeah. So how did that change the way, if it did, how did it change the way people approached, whether it is training, whether it is retention, whether it is recruiting, right? How did the things that you guys saw and the things that you were proud of and part of, did anything change when you got back, or was it back to business as usual?
Oh, you know, it's 82nd, so it's clean your stuff, get back at it. Now, What I will say is, in the last, maybe 36 months of that, of, you know, the year prior to me getting there, and then the, you know, 30 months that I stayed there, it was definitely a different vibe in the 82nd. It was more the when I say vibe, just get me wrong. It was definitely we hadn't been on IRF like that before since the 90s. So, you know what I'm saying? So like, once the war kicked off, everybody's on a pad chart. There isn't really no IRF as we remember it prior to that, you know? And then like 30 months, you know, 12 months prior to that, like, we started implementing this at IRF. And so we were on this, hey, it's out, we're going, you know? And so a lot of the paratroopers, and even the ones that had been there 5, 6 years, maybe 8, 10 years, they hadn't lived it like I had remembered it when I was a private, you know, IRF, 2-hour recall, don't go nowhere, you know? And so the stresses of that being back on top of the 82nd like that in that moment, in that capacity, brought us challenges, because even some of the guys were GWAT guys and they were came in as a private and they're even starting first classes. But the pressure of the recall and the pressure of, like, when you get this, we're down at, you know, heavy, you know, we're down at green ramp, we're down at, you know, we're doing all these things in the 18-hour sequence and go. They hadn't lived that to the extent that I would remember it, having been there my whole life. And so it brought its own challenges, unique challenges for both the paratroopers and their families and the leadership, right? Because frankly, we had majors that hadn't, you know, lived under that, you know, stress. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. Only the battalion commanders, but the majors hadn't done stuff where it was, you know, a year to plan out. We know our day we're leaving. No, every day we're leaving. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, you lived this life.
You even
know,
when you didn't,
you know, it's like, oh,
even when you didn't think you were living that life. I was a lieutenant at the time, and we had just done the operational readiness survey, the ORS. We had done all of our equipment, and on the final day of the equipment check, they would come down, and all the general officers would come, and the colonels would all come and do the big inspection. And that's how it would always go. We do it every year, right? We just got back from Iraq, from Fallujah, and we're about 4 months back. And I go down to do the inspection, and there's nobody there. It's crickets. Where the heck is all the senior leadership? The senior person down there was Carter Smith, and he was sitting on the hood of a Humvee. And I said, dude, what's going on? Like, where is everybody? He goes, oh, you didn't get the word? We're going to Afghanistan. And I was like, get the hell out of here. We just got back from Iraq. He's like, we're going to Afghanistan. They said they needed the ready force. We just finished our inspection. Inspection complete. You're good to go. Put your vehicles on the plane and you're going to Afghanistan. I said, when are we leaving? He said, Saturday. It was Thursday. We're leaving on Saturday. I said, I got to go home and tell Christy. That's the first thing I got to go do. But instead, we went to the conference room that day. We went straight to the conference room. Let's get everybody in here. Hey, we think we're going to be going to Afghanistan. It's not. Don't anybody say anything yet, because it's not. We're not sure. It might not happen. You know. So don't be doing anything different. So the day goes on. I go home for the day. The next morning, I show up, and they're like, "Hey, put your duffel bags in the Connex. Let's get them down to Green Ramp. Let's get the vehicles down there by the end of the day. We got to start loading them up by the end of the day." And I was like, "Hey, I thought you said this decision wasn't final." And they're like, "Well, it is. It's final now. It's good. It's good. We got to be ready to go." And I said, "Well, I got to go home and tell Christy." And they're like, "You didn't tell her last night?" And I was like, you said this thing wasn't locked in. You said we weren't going for sure. And they said, oh yeah, we're leaving on Saturday. You're leaving on Saturday morning. And I go, Friday, today is Brady's birthday. And Sunday is Hunter's birthday. And I was like, is there any way maybe like I could, you know, see the boys for their birthday and then I'll leave on Sunday night? And they're like, No, any issues with you leaving on Sunday? I want all the officers going to leave on Sunday, and you're going to get to Afghanistan and get everything rocking and rolling. And I was like, I got to go home. And I drove home and told Christy, and she goes, why didn't you just call me? Like, why didn't you just call me and tell me? I was like, I thought this was serious, you know? And back down, we loaded everything up, and we were out of there on Sunday. No, we were out of there on Saturday in Afghanistan by Sunday.
Yeah. So that pressure of being back on that IRS cycle, and really, because you think prior to that, they had been to Iraq, and then they came back and they went to D.C., and then they came back, Afghanistan, Poland, you know, and so we were starting to get hit like the 82nd is known for, like, hey, they're calling you, and mm-hmm. y'all guys got to be ready. And then to start having to live on that cycle and be very strict with it, you know, some of the younger paratroopers had not lived underneath that kind of, like,
yeah.
And, you know, it's one thing to know I'm going a year away, but, you know, to wake up every morning and go, yeah, watch the news, what's going on, like, you know. So now they're back on it now, but so that had its own challenges, just making sure the families knew, and, you know, and then you didn't know, you never know which, you know, you're on a cycle, and if you go, you go, and if you don't, you don't. And then for what has been, you know, one of our challenges is that everything was happening when First Brigade was on it, you know what I'm saying? And so it was starting to get where First Brigade down, like, not, you know, not the leadership, but just the paratroopers, right? Because now you're talking about, I've been living on this cycle and I've been gone. I went to Iraq. I came back, went to D.C. Now I'm in Afghanistan. Now you're telling me I'm going to, you know, it was new to the younger ones. And it was a lot of coaching and mentoring to make sure that they understood, like, hey, this is the life.
Thanks for listening today. I hope we sparked some thoughts about the people that have inspired you to be who you are today. I hope you share some of your thoughts, and better yet, demonstrate them for the people in your life. Our pursuit is to get a little bit better every day. Progress equals small victories stacked on top of each other, building like compound interest. Keep stacking these positive habits like getting up early, working your butt off, learning something new, being positive, and surrounding yourself with phenomenal people. Please share your comments at the links in the show notes and DM us at Teach Me to Fish Podcast on Instagram or Facebook. Looking forward to our next conversation. Here's a sneak peek into our next conversation.
I'm glad you asked that question. Here's the one thing I would, the advice I would give to leaders is, I've been looking at this problem, you know, and retention's always been a struggle. Not a struggle in 82nd, because you have the people that want to re-enlist, and we don't do horrible. But, you know, the mission keeps it, you know, when, you know, being number one is hard, because when you're always on recall and you're always leaving and everybody else is watching you go, you know, it's a different life that you live. You know it. And so when you're asking somebody to re-up, it's not like you're asking somebody to re-up in another installation where, you know, they go to JRTC every 28 months and they, you know, go, you know, stuff like that. So, but what I will say is this, in this generation, we were raised to see something through whether you really liked it or not, because that was the thing to do. So we stuck it out. These younger generations, they have multiple irons in the fire. So talking to the Gen Zs, when I used to talk to young paratroopers, they always talk about